Welcome to the Music Biz Podcast, presented by Hypebot.com. I'm Alex May, and today we're bringing you a short recap of SF Music Tech. Last month, on November 9th, Kyle Balin and I attended the SF Music Tech Summit in San Francisco, where we heard from a wide variety of music professionals about the future of the music industry. Between the meet and greets, panels, product demos, and coffee breaks, we were able to conduct a few of our own interviews, and today we're bringing these out to you on the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and give us a rating if you've enjoyed the show. For our first interview, Kyle spoke with Mark Steiner of Gig Salad.
So I'm here with Mark Steiner, the co-founder and CEO of Gig Salad. We're at the SF Music Tech Conference. Mark, I'd love for you to introduce yourself and tell me about your company, Gig Salad.
Thanks, Kyle. We started Gig Salad January of 07. Official launch, beta stage a couple years prior to that. It's a booking platform for entertainers and performers, speakers, and other event service providers. It's a marketplace. So event planners of any type use our platform to find the services that they need. Mostly on the entertainment performance side.
So if I'm an event planner and I would like to have an artist perform at my event, what are the steps that I do to list my event on the marketplace, and how am I connected with musicians?
Simply, we've been very SEO strong for many, many years now. We've been reliant on word of mouth, and it's become a destination for many event planners. You get to the site, you put in what you're looking for, your location, and up pops all the options in the order of closest proximity. And then you can send in get a free quote, check on availability, whatever it is. You with one click, you can send a message to them, and you're in direct contact with the member that's on our site. And you start to the engagement, and you can have something booked within moments. We have a booking platform on the back end, so you can have a contract and be sending a deposit within literally minutes.
So what type of artists are on the platform in terms of kind of where they are in their career as professional performers? And are we only talking about individual musicians? Are we only talking about bands? Or are there other types of creative performers that I can also book for my event?
There's 584 categories. So all sorts of musical genres. Yes, there's plenty of individual artists, soloists, from classical to jazz to cover bands and wedding bands. But again, 584 categories. So we have over 70,000 members on the site across all of North America. And if you're planning your birthday party and you want a sword swallower or a balloon twister, if you know, it's used by everything from every event planner, from a mom planning a kid's birthday party to a bride or wedding planner planning a wedding, to private people planning anniversaries or birthday parties of all sorts, to corporate event planners that have needs. So there's probably, if you were planning an event, we probably have them on our site.
So if I'm an independent artist, I'm in the Chicago area, kind of the general Midwest, how many potential events might I be looking at kind of in my market? And can you talk about the range of like what these events paid and how that payout process works to the musician? What are the kind of stipulations?
Sure. It depends on how mainstream you are. If it's a more avant-garde genre or style, then it's a supply and demand. It depends on how many event planners out there want what you do. So again, if you're as a cover band, then obviously you have a lot more options with corporate and wedding and various things. But if as an independent artist, there's certainly venues who use the site, festivals that use the site, there's occasions where corporate and weddings and those folks want something outside of more traditional music too. So it just depends. And it pays what, any standard going rate is. The beauty of our site is these are more traditional event planners. So there are venue owners and venue bookers but often those aren't the best paying gigs. You know, if you're playing for Door, you're playing for, you know, a small cover charge, whatever. It's, you know, how much might an artist walk home with? And I can put it this way. There are lots and lots of people that are, you know, at least supplementing their income as a result of being listed on GigSout. And there's a lot of people that have been able to, forego their day job and are now full-time entertainers and performers as a result of being on GigSout.
Can you give me a few examples of those musicians who are both supplementing their income and or they've been able to quit their day job?
Oh, sure. We just did a conference in Chicago with CD Baby, and one of the guests on a panel was a gentleman by the name of Austin Ellis, and he performed on The Voice. He was one of the finalists, and he is quoted as saying that, you know, with his $300 investment, that's what a feature membership costs on Gig Salad, he made $30,000 last year. So he's, you know, this is somebody who does original music, but he also, you know, to keep himself able to you know, make a living doing what he's doing, he'll also go out and do some covers, but he's making a decent living just off of what he books off of Gig Salad. That's not to say that that's the only place that he's getting his gigs from.
On YouTube, there are a lot of bands that attempt to market themselves by doing covers of popular artists. Are there any examples of artists who are on Gig Salad that market their performances via their covers that they're publishing on YouTube through videos? Is that something that you see?
I'm certain that there are those direct examples. I'm not sure. We on our platform, you have the ability to post video. And so often the artists are, you know, whatever original videos that they've shot, those, or there's a direct link to their videos being that are posted on YouTube. I'm certain that people are using, you know, YouTube in conjunction with their Gig Salad promo kit, and whether they're posting them doing versions of other people's songs or not, they're again getting work from putting themselves out there. If you know, short of an event planner being able to see an artist live, their second choice is going to be, you know, let me see them on you know, through video. And that's what we promote, you know, using video and reviews are king on our site, just like on any other marketplace. If you aren't familiar with the product that you're purchasing, then what do you want to know? What other people have experienced? And if I can see that thing, then that helps me to make an educated choice.
Okay, so if I'm an event planner, I go on Gig Salad, I say that I've got this particular event, this date and time, and then artists can apply to perform at this event, or the event planner is then seeking out the people who they think would be a good match.
Yeah, it's more of that. This is not a bidding process. Of course, you have to provide a quote for what it is you're doing, but you're in direct contact with the person that you're seeking out. So if you go to our site and whatever it is service you're looking for, you send, you look at what we call a promo kit. And if you like what you see and you want to check on availability or check on pricing, it's messaging. It's as quick as that.
Okay, very cool. And so then if I go to, you know, this artist page that I'm looking at, as you said, I can see a video of the artist. I can see reviews that other event planners have left about a given artist. I can see that they're punctual. They did a great performance. You know, they were good with the audience. They, you know, quickly, professionally loaded out their stuff. All of that is the information that I, as an event planner, can see before I reach out to a band and get a quote for them to perform at my event.
That's exactly right. You basically named it, and you've never been there, I take it. But those it's pretty much those criteria. Most people want to know when it comes to especially booking an entertainment. Well, let me put it this way. There are plenty of professional event planners that use Gig Salad. And then there's also those who have never booked anything like this before. So very much like, you know, if you go to, the old days when you went to the Yellow Pages, all you could rely on when you picked out the plumber that you were booking was, hoping that that person was reliable, showed up, did good work, so on and so forth. Reviews were harder to find unless somebody, you know, used in their marketing referrals or here's what other people have said about me. Now in a technology age, it's that being able to look at what other people have said. And it's that those things. I mean, is this person, did they show up on time? Well, did they show up at all? Did they show up drunk? You know, and once that goes, then it's, you know, the criteria being, are they talented? Can they perform well? And if that video stuff properly demonstrates what they're doing, then that's covered. Again, if you can't go see an act live, then that video comes second, and then making sure that what people have said about them actually supports what the video shows.
I would imagine that some event planners might, you know, go into Gig Salad with maybe like a false stereotype of a musician, right? Like, oh, they're prima donnas, they're not going to show up on time. And if they show up, maybe that's not going to be their best performance ever. To what degree do you have to cut through any musician stereotypes that the event planners have? And in the event that event planner does have a bad experience, how many strikes does an artist have before they're like no longer a Gig Salad performer?
That's a great question. I mean, when you think of other marketplaces, it would actually benefit the consumer to have somebody's profile up there indefinitely. So unless the artist chooses to take themselves down, it's not a bad thing for you and I to be able to look at somebody with good or bad reviews. So if we don't do that vetting, we do try to educate the event planner to, one, pay attention to the reviews. And if they don't have any reviews, that's telling. Why are they choosing not to have reviews? Have they not been gigging at all? But as long as those reviews are there, we like to treat them as, the real deal. We have, and we're leaning towards or very close to having what we're calling verifiable reviews. And that's the difference between somebody in the past has been able to post reviews of past performances. We try to verify those through email. But now we can do it more effectively by them using our event, our booking platform. So if the there was a gig booked directly through us, they didn't choose to go off our site and talk to the member directly and either book through their website or pick up the phone and call them. If they used our booking platform, then we can say no. This, you know, we took money from these people. We know that they showed up. It's a real thing. Then that will be, there'll be a little bit more credence with that one, a little bit more validity.
So you touched on something there that I was thinking about, which is that, you know, it's easy to think about the stereotype of the prima donna musician who maybe won't show up on time, but equally you might have the event planner who wasn't prepared. They don't have the right gear. The speaker setup doesn't work for whatever reason. So if I'm an artist who goes to a gig and there are a variety of technical difficulties that aren't my fault that cause the gig to go bad, and the event planner gives me a bad review, what do I do? Do I reach out to Gig Salad? How does that work? And how do I kind of keep my reputation in check if, in fact, an event didn't go well?
They have the ability to refute that review and give their own their experience, what their side of the story. And in addition, like some other platforms that are out there now in other industries, you will have the ability to directly review the event planner. So other artists will have a heads up of no, this person's a really good client. They're worth going to perform for. Or the other side of it, stay away.
Right. This person is a nightmare. Don't. This went bad for me. So in the music business conversation, a lot of people talk about how musicians are going to now make their money from live performances. But a lot of people don't actually say like where those live performances are going to come from. So I think what's awesome here is that you've created a marketplace where the people seeking musicians for their events can find the talent that is going to perform at their shows. And as you said, you're creating a real revenue stream for artists that is supplementing income and in sometimes becoming their income. I think that's a really cool thing. And it's awesome that you're making these connections.
Thank you. Yeah, it's different from the old traditional route where artists were left to, communicate with one another, find out where the clubs were in various towns, and then they would put themselves, try to create a little mini tour. And what did that take? Calling a bar, calling a venue, pitching your stuff, mailing a promo, mailing their media kit, whether it was back in the day, cassette or a CD or, now with automation and being able to immediately put in somebody's, inbox samples of their music, pictures of what they look like. They're either directing them through a link of a platform like ours and having access to those event planners. What we're able to do is fill in dates. There are a number of artists that have what we refer to as multiple locations. So they'll create a promo kit. They'll duplicate that promo kit in various places around the country, depending on where they want to work. And we have a lot of performers that work nationally. They fly in, take celebrity impersonators, for example, or something that's a little harder to get. I mean, you can find musicians in a lot of, most different places. Certain genres might be more difficult, but we have, they have the ability to manipulate the site to their benefit, whether they want to work out of their hometown or within a certain radius, or whether they want to travel around the country. They can create these multiple promo kits and sort of dot the map, and with the hopes of gigs coming to them during the times that they want to work in those certain areas.
So I'd be interested in hearing, obviously when you started Gig Salad, you had this notion of, I know there's a bunch of performers who would love to have shows. I know there's a bunch of event planners who would love to have performers at those shows. How can we create a marketplace that connects those parties together? As Gig Salad has caught on, how has that reshaped the live events landscape? And as this trend accelerates, right, how do you see this reshaping? Who is playing shows and for whom in these special occasions?
Well, what you described is exactly what happened. I was a booking agent working for a small boutique agency in New York City from 94 to 01. And then I started my own booking agency. And it was at that time that I had a website created. This was the first time I was even working off of a computer. Up until that time, it was all phone and fax for me. But when I went on my own, I created a website. And as a result of that website being up there, again, this is March of 2001, not the infancy of the internet by any means, but it seemed like in my case, in my industry, there wasn't a lot of folks out there yet with web presence, booking agents like myself. So what was happening, I started getting inundated with phone calls, emails from local regional artists looking for opportunities. At the same time, I was getting calls and emails from what I refer to as local regional talent buyers, event planners. And whereas that was not my business model, I wasn't working with artists like that. I wasn't developing artists. I was working with more established artists, national touring acts, celebrities, people with names, people that basically sold themselves. And I was a middle broker for those artists. But I came from an artist background myself. So I knew what it was like to be struggling. I related to these people. They were wanting to be listed on my roster. They wanted gigs. They wanted representation. And though I wasn't willing or able to provide that for them, I did want to help. And finally, as time went on, I was finding it harder and harder to do my job. you know, I was, because I was fielding these phone calls and emails and trying to be helpful, because I was that rejected actor in New York at one point. And I was like, I swore I would never do that, treat others that way. I wanted to be helpful. And finally, I just thought, there's got to be a way of bringing these two parties together. They're missing each other. They're trying to meet. I'm the one that keeps coming up as whatever search they were doing at that time, whether it was talent agencies or something else, that it was I that they were finding. And I went to my friend who had developed my website, who designed my website, and said, you know, let's figure this out. And at that point, it was just, let's create a database. These people that are calling, let's put them on the website, and hopefully that's the website they'll find, as opposed to Steiner Talent. And here we are.
In many ways, that website accidentally became the MVP, and you yourself were manually advising and connecting these people. You know, we didn't have the terms minimum viable product back then, but in a way, that's very much what was happening. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. Yeah, I essentially put myself out of the booking business, because what we were promoting was, listen, you can do this yourself. You don't need representation. You don't need to be listed on my roster. You need to be, we have a platform for you here where you can list yourself, and the rest is, you know, the rest is up to you. We'll provide leads to you. And now you can go and book it. You don't have to, you know, and very often artists are concerned that I'm not a good business person. I need help, but you know, it's not rocket science what I did. And now, as I said, people are doing it themselves and making very good livings doing it.
So as this marketplace grows, getting more events and more musicians, more people find out about it, how do you see Gig Salad reshaping the live events landscape in the coming years?
Well, we believe that if it's worked for the artists that it's worked for, not just artists, because we have photographers on our site, and we have cake decorators and limo drivers and security and other services, it's worked for them. So the natural expansion would be, okay, what's the next level? Because these are, you know, often aspiring performers and entertainers, but we're seeing more now that there's a presence on the side of those who have been doing this for a really long time and actually have a name. And so as we continue to succeed and show by example what we've been able to accomplish for these 70,000 plus people, that next tier, the people that maybe did have a name at some point and it's plateaued and they're just looking, you know, there's a huge, for example, a huge casino circuit of artists that were really popular in the 60s and 70s and 80s or 90s, what have you. And they, like anyone else, are looking to continue their career to continue on. And so, you know, whether it's through corporate gigs and casinos or cruises or, you know, all the, you know, colleges and universities, as they realize that, hey, those event planners are coming to Gig Salad, it would behoove them to certainly consider being listed there as well.
So in summary, what does the future that Gig Salad is trying to build for performers and creatives of all kinds look like?
A booking empire. You know, we've been breaking records this past week at the same time as last year. So it's not seasonal to say, but we've certainly kept growing. But we, you know, this past yesterday, we had over 2,200 leads that went through the site. You know, that's a significant number. You know, so in terms of how prolific we are and what we can provide for all these people, if we can continue on this track, there's no reason why anybody wouldn't want to use, Gig Salad.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for coming on Music Biz Podcast today. If people want to look you up online and learn more about Gig Salad, where can they go? Where can they find you?
Yeah, gigsalad.com, gigsalad.com. My Twitter is Mark's Diner, and that's MarksDiner, not my name, but as close as I could get to it. So We'd love to have you. Call us. We have a customer happiness team that is there to serve you. So if you have questions about the site before you jump in, call us, email us. It's a freemium business model, so there's no reason not to create a profile for yourself and see what comes in.
Thank you so much for sitting down with me today.
Thanks, Kyle. This was great. Thank you.
Our next interview was done with Kevin Bruner, CD Baby's Vice President of Marketing.
So, Kevin, you know, we're sitting here at the SF Music Tech Conference. I'd like you to start out by talking about what CD Baby is and what you do there.
Well, we're a music distribution company. CD Baby's been around since 1998, helping artists make money from their music. So for us, our mission is to just continue on finding new ways to help artists make money from their music. We do digital distribution. We help artists monetize on YouTube. We do sync licensing. And we also do publishing administration. So we're always looking for ways to help artists monetize their music. And I'm the VP of marketing there. I've been with the company for almost 10 years, but I actually started using CD Baby as an artist before that. And so not only do I work there, I use the product. So I'm still distributing music for my projects in several independent projects at the moment. So it's great to actually be amongst the community and help artists do what they love to do.
And your role is the VP of marketing at CD Baby. You know, what does that entail about trying to help get the name of the company out there and, you know, make sure artists are aware of the services that you provide?
Yeah, so we do a lot of content creation as far as like blogs. I do a podcast. We're just trying to help artists, one, understand what their options are. You know, there's a new crop of musicians that come up every year that this idea of distributing their music, making money from their art is something completely foreign to them. And so it's reaching out to those folks. But also, you know, as the world has progressed and the music business changes and it's more about streaming and other forms of monetization like YouTube and various types of placements for your music, that helping the folks that have been, you know, road warriors for years understand that, hey, there's a lot more that you need to be tapping into and understanding how the business is changing and evolving and making sure that you're monetized in all the outlets and all the revenue streams that are available to you. So we do a lot of education. A lot of it's just letting people know what we do, who we are as a company. But a lot of it is just educating artists about things that are available to them. We've started a publishing administration service. I think it's going on 2 years since we launched it. And almost the first year entirely was just helping independent artists understand what music publishing is to begin with, just because it's something that they typically don't encounter when you're, you know, out there independently releasing music. And so we just had to, you know, educate them on that point. To begin with, like what it even is, what we're even talking about, and why it's important. So we spent on a lot of time just trying to help them understand and make sure that, that they get hooked up with those revenue streams.
You made a great point there that every year a new crop of musicians emerge who are new to all these ideas, all these trends, all these strategies. And you have to, you know, obviously educate them up to that 101, 202 level. But at the same time, you have all these musicians who've been following your blog, following your podcast. They're, you know, getting more and more advanced in their thinking about their music career as an artist. How do you balance, you know, reaching the newcomers with that entry-level content versus those who have more expertise and have been following along with the conversation?
You know, most of the content we create is in the blog format. We also do a lot of email marketing and use our newsletter pretty heavily to distribute what we write. So it's just a matter of keeping it balanced as best we can. If anything, I find ourselves, we tend to drift to the advanced side more often than not. And we kind of have to remind ourselves like, hey, you know, There's a lot of people that we're just assuming they even understand that they can get their music on Spotify or Apple Music or all these outlets, you know, and that's kind of a false assumption a lot of times. There's always musicians that, you know, they get the band together. They know that they should start recording something, but then they don't know how to get from point A to point B. And so that's something that we constantly have to remind ourselves, and also, you know, keep adjusting how we talk about the music business and you know the way people talked about it back when CDs were the thing, like, is different than how kids that are coming up mainly using YouTube as a distribution platform talk about getting their music out there. So it's just a lot of constant back and forth with the community. A lot of us at CD Baby are actually independent artists releasing music and are out there playing gigs. So it's just a matter of that, you know, we're part of the community, so we're just trying to keep a pulse on the community and communicate and you know, bring everybody along.
And one way that you recently went about doing that is you started the DIY Musicians Conference. It was in Chicago about a week ago. As far as I understand, it was a huge success. You guys sold out the tickets, you know, potentially, 1,000 artists all at your conference learning about what it means to be a DIY musician and take control of their career. Tell me about the conference and what your experience was like walking through a sea of people who are all potentially your customers and learning about kind of where artists are today.
Yeah, it was a great event. When we started planning to do a conference, we didn't know how many to expect. We didn't know if they would all be from the Chicago area. And it ended up being sold out. And we had artists from 44 different states and 15 different countries. And so next time around, we're going to hope to expand on that do more for the folks coming from out of town and such. But yeah, I mean, it was an amazing event. It was the one thing that everybody commented about is that it was this incredibly positive atmosphere, which to me was a huge win. I think a lot of people there's a lot of headlines of doom and gloom about the music business. And the way I look at it is, you know, artists are going to continue to create music. They're going to continue to create art. And let's just get together and learn how we can be better at that and be better about moving our career forward. And a lot of things that are very tangible for the independent artists, it's great to hear people debate royalty rates and such, but as an artist, that doesn't help me get, how do I improve how I'm performing at my gigs? How do I get better gigs? How do I get the press to get, to notice what I'm doing? And so those things are more tangible for artists. So we spend a lot of time curating, all the panels, and we vetted all the speakers pretty heavily, just to make sure that the people that came got what they were looking for. And it was just this very cool community vibe. I've never felt it at any other conference I've been to. I've been to a lot, and there was just this real community vibe, lots of people hanging out together and very diverse, which we wanted to make sure it was very diverse, both culturally and musically. And I think we accomplished that.
So as you were walking around the conference, tell me about the conversations that you're having with the musicians and the types of questions that they were asking you.
Well, you get a lot of people. I mean, it was interesting because you get a lot of people that, you know, they were just recording their first album and they had heard about the conference and figured they should check it out and get some advice. Then we had some others that were seasoned pros that had been doing it a long time. And, you know, they're still trying to understand publishing or wanting to understand YouTube as a platform better. So there was a broad spectrum of questions. But I think the one thing, you know, that resonates when I'm saying there was the community vibe is that a lot of times artists feel alone in their pursuits. You know, they may not live in a music hub like LA, New York, Nashville, or even another major city. And so a lot of times they feel like they're kind of stepping out on their own. And so there was a lot of that feeling of them just, I mean, I've never been at a conference where people were just like instantly having conversations with everybody in a very genuine and authentic manner, where it was just like, hey, I'm a hip hop artist from here and you're a classical artist. Let's talk. Let's go lunch. In fact, I heard a story about somebody that, you know, they came up to someone else that works at CD Baby and said, I am a classical artist, and I saw this hip-hop artist. I said, let's just go get lunch. And they were kind of nervous going into the lunch, thinking, oh, these us two, we have nothing in common. But then they had lunch together and realized they have everything in common, and that they're both musicians pursuing art. And so that was some of the highlights of the event to me, that it's like there's so many people that feel like they're kind of doing this alone, or that they're in their genre, so there's nothing to learn from someone else in another genre. But bringing people together and just kind of breaking down those walls and realizing, hey, we're all musicians, we're all creative, we're all trying to pursue our art form. Let's just learn from each other.
Yeah. I mean, maybe in your local scene, it can feel competitive because you're in a way, as much as you know all the other musicians, and I'm sure for you in Portland, you just go back with year, for years with some of these people. But ultimately, there are only so many slots where bands can get played. And if you're starting at the bottom of the rung and trying to work your way up, it almost feels like you're competing for attention with all these other people. And, you know, I've heard people say too, like, you know, you would think that it would feel like a community, but it often doesn't. You know, maybe we don't interact with people as much. So when you bring all of these musicians together from all around the U.S., all around the world, they really get to feel like they belong as a DIY musician who's striving towards making a career and figuring it out. And then what they realize is that everyone else is figuring it out too, and that they have a lot to learn from each other and, you know, learn from, you know, this great array of panelists that you've brought to the event.
Yeah, and I think what you said is correct. I've been in a band that's, you know, fighting in the local scene, and, you know, you're like trying, fighting against, you know, what should be folks that are your friends in the community, and they are, but when it comes down to it, you're like, I want that opening slot. I don't want them to get that opening slot. And there's this competitive nature. But I think when, even with that, it's still cool to recognize that, you know, this is an artist, you're on a long journey. And if you're someone that's just, you know, jumping into the scene, hoping that you'll be a hit in 6 months, and if you're not, you'll go on to something else, then music's probably not for you. But you kind of have to remind yourself that music careers tend to have an ebb and flow to them. And those people that are in the scene that you're interacting with, those people that are opening for you in 2 years, something could be happening big for them, and they're looking to you to, you know, to help open for their bigger show. And you know, it's just somebody on Twitter told me recently that, because we were talking about this and this subject, and he told me that years ago his band had some random show and this hip hop group was opening for him, and it was just for this weird mix of a bill, and you know, he wished he had connected with them better. I think this artist does like more like Americana type music, so it was a really weird bill. Turns out it was the Roots when they were just starting out and nobody, and so those kind of things happen, and you're kind of like, dang, I wish I had looked at those people as more of like, you know, I don't know, that we're in it together, as opposed to like, I'm competing against them. Because typically, you know, those people, you know, one band having something good happen in a scene can lift the whole scene and be beneficial to everybody.
So if a local musician, you know, reaches out to you and says, you know, Kevin, I know you're in this band, Small Town Poets. I know you have this career working at CD Baby. I'd really just love to grab a beer with you. I'd like to talk to you about what you've learned along your journey as both a musician and a professional. What kind of like heartfelt lessons or message would you try to communicate to this person?
Oh, there's lots. In fact, that happens all the time. And actually, that kind of led me to my career at CD Baby, because after I left that, you know, Small Town Poets, we were on a major label for a while, and the band kind of went on a hiatus as we all kind of went our separate ways, and just kind of, you know, for me, part of it was being shell-shocked, kind of like I was so busy, so, you know, running ragged, playing so many shows, and just kind of felt like everyone was benefiting from it, from except us, the band, you know. And that's when I thought there had to be a better way. There had to be a better way for artists to connect with their fans. And so artists would all the time would be like, hey, I know you're on this label. Tell me how I get signed. And I'd be like, tell them, look, you know, that's what you need to stop looking at these people as, you know, the gatekeepers to your career. You know, especially now I tell artists is that you really need to start, you know, developing a fan base. You need to start making connection with fans. You need to keep developing yourself as an artist and write good music, building a catalog. And, you know, as those things progress, opportunity will come. I mean, and you have to, you know, have to be looking for opportunity as well. You're not going to sit back and wait for somebody to come and you know, like, you have been selected. You may now move to the next level. I mean, you gotta hustle. But you know, I think a lot of artists, you know, they'll make an album, be like, all right, it's done. And be like, no, you need to make another one and keep developing yourself as an artist. And things, you know, will happen, but you gotta be intentional with what you're doing and understand that, you know, everybody's going to look for what you can offer them. Like, if that's the club booker, you're just trying to get that first gig. Well, that club booker is going to be looking at you like, well, I've got a club I got to fill with people to sell drinks to. Are you going to solve that problem for me? If not, then you're probably not the one I want playing this show on Friday night. If the answer is yes, then maybe we'll try something and see where you guys fit in. So it's kind of like looking, understanding that, you know, you've got to get, make those inroads with people in the community. You got to get them to trust you, and then you got to deliver. So, I mean, if you start telling all the club owners in your town, oh yeah, we can pack it out, and then five people show up, you're not going to get a gig again. But it's just really a matter of, you know, understanding that it's going to be a journey. It's going to be a lot of little wins along the way that when you look back after a year or two, you're like, man, I came so far. And now I see how all those little things started building. And I think you also need to have some specific goals. Like, what are you trying to do? There's so many ways to pursue music these days where it's, you know, there's artists that their whole presence is on YouTube. And they're about using that platform to connect with people, whether it's doing cover song videos or just fun videos or just, you know, the way they do music just works on that format. And a lot of those guys don't even tour. So that's different than someone who's like, we just want to be the road warriors and get out there and play in front of people, because when people see us live, they get it, and things, you know, and good things will happen. For me, like, some of my goals, especially after I stopped touring, you know, full time, was I wanted to get song placements for my music. And I was just thinking about this the other day. There was, you know, part of my journey of what I've done at CD Baby is I was pitching for Sync for a while, and I wanted to get some of my songs placed in some very specific places. And it took a long time, but I actually was able to achieve those goals. And I was just reflecting the other day, I'm like, wow, I've actually accomplished a lot of things. And if I hadn't said, I specifically want to do this, and didn't have something I was shooting for, it probably wouldn't have happened, because I just would have, you know, not had anything to focus on and say, I'm moving towards this. How do I make that happen? So I think having some goals of like what you're even trying to do, and getting, especially if you're a band, getting everybody on board with those goals, because oftentimes everybody has different opinions about what should be happening and what they think is going to happen.
So now I'd like to go back to, you know, something we talked about earlier. And it's really that, you know, if you're reading all the news articles, all the different blogs, you can get a sense that the state of the music business for the artists is almost kind of pessimistic. It's down. Everyone's really worried. But you said, you know, when you're walking around the conference and you're talking to all these artists, that there was a very positive, optimistic vibe that, you know, on the ground, I'm sure people still had important questions, right? But they were optimistic and excited. And you wouldn't always feel that way if your perception of how artists are doing is based on what you read on the internet. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on what do you think the state of like the DIY musician is in 2015, and how far, you know, have we come, as you've been, you know, both working in this space for the last decade, as well as trying to educate and evangelize best practices across all these different marketing tools and services?
Well, I'll start out by saying that I think there definitely still needs to be work done in order to, you know, fairly compensate artists as best we can as new digital platforms arise. So that being said, I'm still extremely optimistic about the state of independent music and what independent artists can do. And the reason being is that there is absolutely nothing keeping an artist, putting a wall between the artist and the fan. if an artist wants to make music and connect with fans, they absolutely can. And that's one of the things I love about working at CD Baby is that there really is, I mean, we have so much music and so much music that in the old school music business never would have had the light of day. And not because it's not even good. I mean, we have music that's by artists that play very unique instruments that's definitely not mainstream, but it's amazing. Or we have outsider art or just weird random stuff that is somehow found an audience. And I think that is what's so cool about the state of the independent of the industry for independent artists, that there is no one saying, no, I don't like what you're doing, and so therefore you don't deserve an audience. If they can build an audience, they deserve that audience. And I think that is what's so amazing about where we're at. So I think, you know, there's lots of music out there. A lot of artists will be like, I think the biggest thing I hear from independent artists is that, how do I break through? How do I, you know, there's so much music out there. How do I get people to listen and build an audience? And that's where, you know, I think a lot of artists need to spend time thinking about, how am I going to communicate who I am in a way that's compelling, that people want to listen to my music? But as far as there being ways to pursue music, there's never been more ways for people to do cool stuff, create music, and do cool stuff with it that doesn't even involve going on the road. I mean, some of our biggest sellers over the years at CD Baby, people selling hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of music, were people that were just doing stuff on YouTube or had were pretty much living in relative obscurity, but then had a really big placement on a TV show and suddenly they're selling music, or got put on some playlists on Spotify that started, you know, getting tons of traction, and they didn't have to go out and tour. And those things didn't exist when I started. I mean, when I started, it was like, hey, great, you did your record. Now we'll see you in a year after you get done with that first tour, only to come home and wash your clothes and go back out again for another year. So to me, as an artist, when you take away those barriers of people saying, hey, I'm going to decide whether or not fans can have the opportunity to like your music, it's amazing, and there's so much opportunity. Yeah, and there's things to be considered about, like, how do we best monetize our music and how can we make it better for independent artists so they can make a full-time living? Those are discussions we need to keep having, but artists need to keep creating art. And, you know, the thing that keeps me coming back as an artist is that there's always that something that you never know when lightning's going to strike and you're going to connect with people. With Small Town Poets, when our album came out, we thought the album, our debut album, was amazing, because every artist thinks their debut album is amazing. But it was just this random lightning strike where just things just started connecting, and this, you know, kind of grassroots movement happened where our music was gaining traction, and it's just an amazing thing to experience. And you never know when those things are going to happen. I mean, I've gone through periods of musical drought where I was having, you know, feeling like, oh, I just need to give up. And then, you know, then you meet some guys and you start creating stuff and there's good chemistry, and you never know. I mean, one of the local bands I'm a part of in Portland, we don't really play anymore, but some of the guys, we still write new music together. We just had a song on an ABC TV show this past year, and it was an album that I believed very strongly in, but was recorded in 2009. And it's like, it still has life. It still, things can still happen with it. And so that's what I always love about music, and the idea that, man, you just gotta keep moving forward. And, you know, there's more opportunity than ever, and there's no shelf life anymore either. So, your music can be relevant to infinity, because no one's going to say, hey, we got to make room for other titles, so we got to remove yours. But your music can connect with people that, at any point. So I'm very optimistic about the state of the industry.
That's incredibly well said. I think my last question would be, who else do you think is making a significant effort to put money in the pocket of artists? Like, who would you call out as, like, doing great work to continue to make revenue for artists?
Well, I mean, we've got, there's several people that come to mind immediately. You know, Sound Exchange, we've been big fans of them over there, and we had them come out to our conference to speak because we just think it's so important for artists to understand the revenue that their music is generating, you know, with all these different digital types of usages. And that's one company that, you know, that's doing good work on behalf of artists. And it's something that where there's this extra royalty that a lot of artists don't understand. They're like, I'm with ASCAP, so I've got that covered. And so they discredit it and they're like, no, this is different. This is a different right that you have and you need to be compensated for it. So they're doing good work. I love what the guys over at Gig Salad are doing. I think, you know, artists oftentimes feel this pressure that, you know, I need to go out and perform. And that means playing clubs on the road in various cities across America. And a lot of times it's just alternative gigs, I guess is what some people are calling them. But corporate gigs, parties, weddings, you name it, people are dying for live music experiences at their events. I mean, the appetite for it is huge. And it's become a very strong revenue source for other artists. And it's always been that way. You know, when I was touring professionally, we played all sorts of like alternative gigs that weren't the big theater, cool rock show. It was, you know, a corporate gig. Or we even played a string of shows at Walmart. And we got a lot of press for that. But it was, you know, there's all these different ways where people, you could get in front of people and get paid to play. And I think that's, I've heard so many great things by artists using that and it being a way that they can actually sustain their career. And not only that, make it their full-time living from making music because they're tapping into other revenue streams that they hadn't before. So, you know, and we're doing a lot of work at CD Baby that I think is really going to be a big part of what artists look at is how they go about making money from their music.
Thank you so much for taking the time to share all that with me. If people want to look you up online and as well as learn more about CD Baby, where can they do that? And be sure to plug the excellent blog and podcast that you make as well.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. It's just at K Bruner, the letter K in my last name, Bruner, B-R-E-U-N-E-R. I have that open all day at work. So if artists want to ask me questions, that's super easy to get a response from me. Over there. Yeah, we have our blog. It's the DIY Musician blog. It's got lots of great info about all aspects of the music business from an independent artist perspective. It's just diymusician.cdbaby.com. And then our podcast, which is the DIY Musician podcast, is in the iTunes podcast store and the website cdbabypodcast.com. We've been doing that since 2007, and we're, I think, at 155 episodes now, and it's just a lot of great stuff with people from all over the industry that are doing things that artists can learn to help move their career forward. So you won't find the head of Sony on there on the podcast because I don't really have an interest to have him on as a guest because I want people that are like, hey, I did this, I'm an artist, I did this, and it helped me move my career forward. And that's what we try to really focus on, actionable advice for the independent artist, even though I would love to have a chat with the head of Sony, but just not for the podcast. Yeah. But anyway, that's that. And you can go to cdbaby.com is our storefront for artists, but there's a link at the top of that website. They'll take you to our members page where you can find out about distributing your music worldwide, you know, all the major retailers. We still sell CDs for artists, but digital distribution, YouTube monetization, sync licensing, and publishing administration, it's all there. And we'd love to have you.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Kevin.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to our interviewees and for everyone who came out to SF Music Tech this year. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Music Biz Podcast by Hypebot.com. Stay up to date with the latest podcast releases by subscribing to us on iTunes or SoundCloud, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode.